Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Respiratory. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on strategies for the management of severe type 2 asthma. Specialists in the MDT involved in caring for patients with severe type 2 asthma share their perspectives on the disease burden and optimal management strategies for patients with severe type 2 asthma, with a focus on endotyping and biomarkers to guide biologic treatment selection. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Regeneron Pharmaceuticals Incorporated and Sanofi Genzyme. In this podcast, a pulmonologist, an allergist, and a primary care physician are joined by a patient with severe asthma and discuss evidence-based guidance for the long-term management of patients with severe type 2 asthma.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alberto Pappe. I'm professor of respiratory medicine at the University of Ferrara in Italy. And I'm pleased today to be with Professor Ioana Gacci from Romania. She's professor of allergy and clinical immunology at the Transylvania University. And Professor Barbara Ion, which comes from Minneapolis. She's professor of family and community health at the University of Minnesota. We have the pleasure to have with us also Miss O'Neill. She's a patient with severe asthma and advocate for others with asthma from Leland in Florida. Now, the topic of this session is quite challenging, optimizing long-term management of patients with severe T2 asthma, which evidence and clinical practice guideline should we deal with. We know that often or usually a multidisciplinary team is required to manage asthma because of the different aspects related to the disease. Let's move to Barbara and ask how she sees the role of primary care physician in the management of patients with severe asthma and the relation with the different specialties. Is this an issue? Is it the coordination and the organization of this type of multidisciplinary approach something that see the primary care physician primarily involved?
I hope so, because usually we're the ones who saw the patient first. Most patients start with their primary care site, and we're the ones that needed to recognize this looks like this is either difficult to treat or severe asthma, and I need help. So that's the first step, is recognizing that we need to go beyond what we're comfortable with and then help facilitate the referrals to all of the other physicians.
I want to hear the voice of Miss O'Neill on this topic. Has she had any experience with a multidisciplinary team in the management of her clinical condition? Any suggestion for everyone to follow?
I think I just heard a perfect suggestion on that multidisciplinary approach to have the doctors to communicate about the patient. It's not going to be easy for the patient to do that. I was able to start a nonprofit organization called the Let's Kick Asthma Foundation, and we are patient focused. We meet, we have support groups, we bring in healthcare professionals, doctors, respiratory therapists, different people to come in, experts to talk about different topics as they relate to asthma. And that's what we're trying to do. I'm trying to do with that organization is to educate the patient so that the patient can get to a point where they are aware of the fact that maybe I need to try a multidisciplinary approach.
Yeah, that's ideal. Ioana, you are very much involved in guidelines preparation. And certainly they might be a facilitator point to start with, at least. But you know, there are different guidelines, not always telling the same type of recommendation. Do you think there is something that should be done or for having a unique voice? Or is it the level of concordance good enough to go on with different type of expert telling or reading different books in terms of guidelines?
Well, that's a very difficult issue, I might say, that you are raising this, because the ideal situation is that we should speak the same language. But, you know, there will always be peculiarities that we cannot ignore according to the specialty background, that you see a little bit different things, and then according to the location where you are and according to the resources that you have. And I would say that finally, the resources are dictating very much what we are doing with these guidelines, because they look very nice on paper. But when we go and try to implement them in real life, this is very, very difficult because we do not have the resources to do this. So I would say that the main key is not that we are not very well aligned between the guidelines. We are pretty much similar in the key points that we are communicating, but the implementation is extremely a disaster.
Great. Barbara, primary care physician main barriers into this diagnostic and treating path and help it can be received?
Well, I think the first barrier you will always hear is time and the resources in our office. You know, in primary care, we're expected to see a patient every 7 to 10 minutes, and 7 to 10 minutes is not long enough to deal with someone with a complex chronic illness. And so that's the problem. And resources, for example, we mentioned checking inhaler technique. I may not have anyone in my office who really understands all the different kinds of inhalers and is very good at that. So that's a problem. Education is so critical, but that takes time, and it also takes someone who can help us with that. And then, of course, we have many, many conditions we're supposed to keep up to date on the guidelines with. Asthma is only one of many. And so we may not be aware of the latest guidelines. But there are some simple, inexpensive things that can help. And I'm going to say asthma action plans are something that gets overlooked and is critical. Anybody can help write an asthma action plan. You can write it on a piece of paper. It's not expensive. And it does make a huge difference because it assures that all of us at least have one piece of paper that we all agree this is the goal and this is what we think should be done.
Now, ladies, in the management of asthma, now we have these big, big opportunities, which is represented by the new biologics. I want again to start from Mrs. O'Neill because she's been through a very tough story. And I want to ask what has changed in her life, I would say in general, in terms of activity, relation, possibility to do and not to do after she's moved into biologics?
Actually, for me, prior to being put on a biologic, I had a lot of restrictions on my life because of severe asthma, the symptoms. I had a lot of missed days at work. I had financial burdens because of the medications and the costs and the co-pays, and I wasn't able to do a lot of the things that I enjoyed doing. I also enjoyed dancing and riding motorcycles and very physical activities that really, you know, even climbing a flight of stairs.
Wow.
Yeah, just things that you don't even consider until you have trouble breathing. And so those were the things that I dealt with. And that was sort of the limitations on my lifestyle prior to being placed on a biologic. After the biologic, my symptoms are well managed, well under control. I'm able to do anything that I want to do, all the physical activity that I was used to doing and being able to do, I can now do. And it's been life-changing for me. I have no more the symptoms, the inflammation is gone. And that just came from, in my case, the final diagnosis was eosinophilic asthma. And so with an allergist actually treating the eosinophils, the levels, and keeping those under control, that has eliminated all of my symptoms.
How can we choose the right biologics? How to personalize? Which outcomes to follow? Is there any guide or any suggestion that we can use to decide to get such an happy ending that we have just heard of?
What we hear here from Ms. O'Neill is a happy, let's say, ending, that you are saying, that with a good diagnosis leading to the proper targeted treatment. Also, as you know, even if you select correctly, the good biological for the patient is not always a key of success, because it might not respond to that biological. So the rate of response is, again, half-half. So it's quite difficult to make the decision in the clinic, but it has to take into account several factors. So what we are recommending, for example, in the AKI guidelines is the triple pillar decision, where you look at the phenotype of the patient, including the comorbidities. Then you also associate the biomarkers. Some of those might be easily measurable, like blood eosinophils. And then you also add the outcomes that you would like to achieve, like, for example, reducing the exacerbations or improving lung function. And based on this triple pillar decision, you choose, and you think that you choose the best biological for your patient.
So, Joanna, which outcomes and which marker to consider for biologics, but particularly which outcome in terms of efficacy has been obtained both in randomized clinical trial and in associated post-hoc analysis for these biologics?
Well, I think that the major impact and what really changed the field in the treatment of severe asthma was the impact on exacerbations, because they were really decreased by more than half, which is a real, real success considering the economic burden and the burden on the patient family, on the patient life. So the major success in reducing asthma exacerbations, not necessarily only the severe ones, but also the milder ones that are very well controlled. The second is the improvement in lung function that occurs a little bit more with some of the biologicals, not with all of them. And of course, the reduction in the oral corticosteroids is again a major success that we achieve. So with these three, let's say, endpoints that are clearly there, I think that we are advancing into a new era of treatment in severe asthma.
And one of the things that we always get asked is, okay, I'm going to go see them. How soon should I expect things to change? Is it going to change next week, the next day, after the first dose? What do we tell the patients to expect?
Well, I think that's different, Barbara, because you might have what we call super responders, which respond after two or three injections. They really come into your office and they say, "Doctor, I can fly," or something like that. There are, let's say, a little bit later responders, which where you need to explain to them that they need to wait up for up to 3 or 4 months or even longer if the asthma is very severe. So it all depends also on the severity of asthma, of what you are expecting there, and on the way that the patient can avoid the triggers or not.
I wondered if we could ask Ms. O'Neill, were you a super responder? Was it overnight?
It basically was. I responded well after the first treatment. Interestingly enough, a few days before I took my first biologic injection, I was having an exacerbation and I connected with my doctor and said, "Hey, I think I need to take," I had some oral steroid medication on me. And I said, "I'm going to take this because I'm having some trouble breathing." And that was just a few days prior to my very first biologic injection. And so after that first injection, I responded well. So yeah, I would definitely categorize myself as a super responder.
You are very lucky. So good ending and very lucky also. Barbara, what if the treatment doesn't work in the follow-up? What's the chances and the possibility that we have?
There really needs to be continued monitoring of their symptoms and exacerbations. And if it's not better, we shouldn't say it's one and you strike out. there are the opportunities to send people back and say, hey, things are not going so well. Is there a different biologic to try? Because they're not all identical. And I think that's important to realize too.
Great, thank you. I think we have had a great discussion on the management of severe asthma, the use of biologics. So as much as possible to personalize the approach to this severe asthma group of patients. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Respiratory at www.touchrespiratory.com. Don't forget, there are two other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team. You can also view a second activity in this series on severe type 2 asthma, a Touch panel discussion on Touch Respiratory.